Slow down towards the third base side of second. And we roll over that left side of the infield. The 1-0 high and deep to center. This ball is crushed. Garcia run into the track. He's at the wall and I watch it fly out. Castellanos hits his second home run. The Tigers with two at-bats in this first inning. Two batters, they lead 1-0.
Down a long set at the belt. Now the delivery, and here it comes. That's into the air down the right field line again. Slicing toward the corner, Cordell Fair. That ball is fair off the wall. Candelario didn't know it. He's rounding third right now, getting the green light. He's going to come in and score, and Miguel Cabrera stops at second with another RBI, this time a double, and it's 6-1 Tigers. Hit high in the air to deep right center field. That is chasing Castellanos back. He'll look up, and this one's gone into the bleachers.
It was high, it was far, and it's gone.
And that is number 4 on the year for Yonder Alonso. It's now an 8-2 game.
Reniger from the set to look at third, the delivery. Swinging a high fly, deep center field. At the track, at the wall, Jones can't get it. Two-run homer, we're with it too. Turn on the fireworks. High fly, left field, this hit a ton. At the track. At the wall, leaping, gone. Three-run homer, Sox lead. Turn it on, light it up.
They may be questioning, Ed, if Abreu passed Anderson at first base. It was very close. I'm kind of befuddled right now because if that just happened, there are some things you just can't explain.
The pitch swung on high, deep to left. Got a chance. Hit the track. It's gone. Game-winning home run. Light it up. Sox win 12-11.
It was a wild one last night, to say the least, at Guaranteed Rate. Field highlights courtesy of yours truly, WGN Radio. Look at you, Andy Mazur, making the highlight reel. Oh, there you go.
I had to make sure that got in there. You know, it's in my contract.
No, hey, listen, self-promotion is one of a very key thing in media.
Yes.
Look who's in studio.
He's here.
He's former White Sox, now working, of course, for the organization. Michael Huff, good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Good to be seen here, guys.
That was, did anybody else throw something when Tim Anderson did the bat flip for the winner last night? Because that was a moment to celebrate.
I was high-fiving a few people where I was at. I'll tell you for sure.
Did you see somebody on Twitter did a side-by-side of that one and the Kansas City one? It's exactly the same thing. The swing and the javelin throw, it's the same thing.
I saw that as well. That was creepy how they did a great job. I'm like, okay, let's have some fun. Now, throw it out there.
Now, they didn't exactly do that in your day, Michael Huff. That's a little aggressive now, but I people are coming around to it. I love it. I like some excitement in my baseball, but then some do get annoyed by it, like the Kansas City Royals.
Well, I mean, for me, playing in the early to mid-90s, there were a couple guys that did a few things, i.e. Barry Bonds. You know, there's a few people for good or for bad, but in my mind's eye, if you're doing it and you're going to your teammates and you're facing your fans or you're facing your dugout and you're doing something, you're not showing up the other team. I mean, this is just exuberance and excitement, and we know Tim so excited about this year and all the prospects coming up and all the fun stuff that's going to be happening. I really don't see a problem.
So the other day, I don't know if you guys saw the Phillies and Mets game where Rhys Hoskins hit the home run. He was drilled the night before. And he got thrown high and tight that same night. He hit a home run. It took him 34.2 seconds to get around the bases.
Oh, yeah. He was slow trot.
He was trotting. And to the credit of the pitcher after the game, he said, hey, if I would have made a better pitch, he doesn't get to run the bases.
See, I don't want to go at you baseball players here, Michael Huff, because, you know, I don't have the same pedigree as you. I did dominate freshman B baseball at Highland Park in 1989.
That's why we're both here, right behind the mic, right?
Four errors in the first inning of one game, never recovered mentally, and I'm still actually fighting that moment today. But there's a certain, for lack of a better word, softness where a pitcher gets... Somebody hits a home run off you, and so you're up. I'm mad at you now. I'm going to throw at you rather than like looking in the mirror and say, "Hey, man, I made a bad pitch." Like it's portrayed as tough. I'm tough. I'm going to hit you now. But really, it's the other way, and you're reacting like a 5-year-old. Am I wrong here?
I'm not going to say really wrong. I'm going to like spin this just a little because I remember in the pitchers' meetings or in the clubhouse when we would have the meetings and kind of listening in on the pitchers' meetings that if there were certain players that were leaning over the plate, you know, our pitching coach was telling them, you got to throw it inside and don't be afraid to hit someone. I had a great teammate in Jack McDowell that, again, he would really see if someone was diving for his forkball or slider outer half. And if he saw a guy diving like that, he's like, screw it. If I got two outs and I'm not a high pitch count, I'm just going to freaking hit the dude if I see him, and I'll let him go to first base. I'll get the next guy out.
Yeah, there's a difference to me and the way that the umpires run the game these days, because if you hit somebody now, there's a warning, and you throw the ball inside, you don't even get a chance to retaliate because the umpires are trying to figure out. You know, to me, it's hard enough for an umpire to get a call right, let alone a ball and strike, let alone figuring out, hey, you were trying to throw at him. They have no idea. And the self-policing times when you were playing eliminated all this stuff, because you hit one guy, they hit another one, it's over. It's
right.
Done.
It was even, imagine an umpire trying to say to someone like Nolan Ryan, oh, I'm sorry,
yes,
sir, you can't throw inside.
You're ejected from the game.
Nolan would have hogtied an umpire.
White Sox Weekly is on the air here, team. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We should lay out what's going on here today. Andy, you sat down with General Manager Rick Hahn. We're going to play that coming up after 4 o'clock. Ron Kittle's going to be on the show at 4:35. Michael Luff, you're doing phenomenal stuff off the field with the White Sox Training Center. Am I saying that right now? I know we've had a flip here from White Sox Bulls to the White Sox doing their own thing, the Bulls are doing their own thing.
Yeah, it's very exciting. You know, the Bulls Sox Academy was started literally 30 years ago by Jerry, trying to give back into the communities. For me, being back in Chicago for the last 10 years and working out there, over the last couple months, over, I want to say, 6 months, both of the organizations, it was challenged to them from the folks out in Lisle that how do we make the Bulls take and drive us a little bit more, the White Sox take and drive the baseball fast pitch a little bit more, rather than some folks out in Lisle doing good things, getting thumbs up from both the Bulls and the White Sox, and then having the Bulls and White Sox support that. At the time being the president, I challenged some folks to let's turn this thing around and really have the Bulls utilize what they had, which was this great facility, these great coaches. And for the White Sox, same thing. You have this great facility, these great coaches, but really have the messaging coming from the White Sox and the Bulls, and really having sort of the marketing and the support. And it's been, since we started this sort of after the first of the year, it's been incredibly exciting.
And such a great opportunity for kids to be a part of all that and feel like they are part of that organization.
Yeah, well, and in some ways they always were, but now I think that there's a little bit added element to it because you truly have the White Sox marketing department with Mike Downey, Gareth Brundtland, and Brooks Boyer really reinforcing and almost doubling down on any of the programming that we're doing, be it a hitting, a fielding, a throwing for the boys, be it a fast pitch slapping camp or something for the girls, and really making sure we're getting them down to the ballpark and really becoming a part of the White Sox family.
So for parents who are listening right now and they've got a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, and they think they've got some talent, maybe they'll be able to play high school baseball, maybe they'll be able to do more than that, and they want to help their kid as best as possible and maybe align with what you guys are doing, how does that work?
I would just go online. Go to the whitesox.com/play, and you will see we've got sort of four areas of doing things, from travel teams that we are doing the travel teams, to regular camps and clinics, to private lessons, to doing things both inside our facilities, but also reaching out to communities and going and doing programming in communities, or actually training travel teams in their facilities and their backyards.
And how will they get to interact with you, Michael Huff, former White Sox, played with the organization, 91, 92, 93, part of a division championship team?
You'll see Michael Huff and Dan Pasqua at various camps, both in our facilities in LaGrange, where we have a great partnership with the LaGrange Park District. Dean Bissius and folks there do a great job. Dan Pasqua oversees that, and he comes out to Lisle with me. And then in the summer, right now, it's so exciting because for the summer camps, we are literally going to be in over 40 communities for over those 10 weeks from Northwest Indiana all the way up to Libertyville in the northern suburbs, all the way out west, Geneva. And you're going to have either Dan Pasqua or Mike Huff at every game. We're going to be bringing all the kids to the ballpark. If you register for a camp, you are coming to the ballpark. You're going to have a chance to meet with one of the coaches, be it Joe McEwing, Nick Capra. You're going to be with Jason Benetti, and we're going to have one of the starting players. So it's stay, watch batting practice, and stay for the game.
Age ranges, what are we talking here?
For the summer camps, it's kind of 5 to 12. We really try to hit that little league, and granted, little league might be 9 to 12, but we kind of work our way down to the T-ballers, those little sluggers. But the call it 5 to 12 for the summer camps. And again, a very exciting time. They're going to get a lot of swag. They're going to get a lot of stuff from the White Sox, you know, from you know, the coaches. But the neat part is that you're going to get four tickets. You're going to go to a game. You're going to see, it's a fireworks night. Hmm. You're going to be a part of batting practice. So you're going to see the World Series trophy. It's a pretty special.
And what's that cost? It's a great value, you were
it's
telling
me. $1.50. It's like $150 for a 5-week camp. Five-day camp, week-long camp, 5 days, either in the mornings, 9 to 12, or the afternoons, 1 to 4.
Can I pass for a 12-year-old, you think?
See, that's about
I act like one. Maybe.
I have to shave the beard a little bit.
Well, and you're here. Look, you're a local guy, went to Northwestern, played for the Sox.
Remember playing on those Highland Park fields very well.
Right. I mean,
Trier boy.
New Trier.
I still talk to him, even though he went to New Trier.
But so, you know, when you're trying to actually get to where you got to playing in the big leagues and you're in the Midwest – with the weather that we deal with, it's you're and everything that's going on down south where they're playing year round, you're climbing uphill, right?
In some ways, you are. Again, the neat part was when we were started 30 years ago by Jerry Reinsdorf, it was the Bull Sox Academy. So we were really pushing kids to playing multiple sports. And I think up north, when you have that ability, you are going to develop an overall and a complete athlete rather than playing baseball for 12 months a year or AAU and that basketball for 12 months a year. So when I first came back to the organization, back to Chicago, literally there were a couple of parents that I would see in September. And look at our swing. You know, we did the summer camp. We play on this travel team. We're starting to get after it. I'm like, it's September. Give the kid some time off. Look at my shirt. I have two logos on it, basketball and baseball. Wouldn't you like to try basketball? And the kid's kind of looking at me, almost afraid to say no to dad. But then it began to kind of sink in. And almost every one of the kids that plays for us and all of the travel teams and all the little leagues that we are working with – everyone espouses the multiple sport. Everyone understands, again, if I can teach and build that foundation, which we can help them. And most importantly, we love helping the teachers. I mean, I'm grabbing parents, Dan Pasqua, when our coaches, Jerry Novak, is out there working with these teams. We're making sure the coaches are working with us, but we also call out every parent on the side. And the joke is that, hey, we are so excited to be here and work with your kid this one or two times. And God bless these coaches. They're going to see your kid 30 times this year, and we've already worked with them once and now a couple of practices. But guess what, Mom and Dad? You have to see them 365 times. So watch what we're doing and reinforce it at home.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, because you'll bump into great baseball players, the guys that have retired that are Hall of Fame caliber players, and they say to every parent, make sure this kid gets a well-rounded experience in sports, because you never know when your football instincts can take over in basketball, or your basketball instincts can take over on a baseball diamond. And as you point out, just pure enjoyment, just to be able to get to experience something else.
I want to come back and talk about that, because I think it's just a very important conversation, because you have everyone's ramping it up. Parents want their kids to get that
scholarship. You get pigeonholed, you know?
Right, and there's a lot of thoughts on how best to do it. So let's have that conversation with somebody who might have a couple ideas about it. Michael Luff coming on back here. Hey, take the family out to the ball game with a family four-pack. Receive four tickets, four hot dogs, four drinks, four chips. $49. That is a deal. It's brought to you by Country Financial. Prepare for your financial future one simple step at a time and take simplesteps.com. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/4packs today.
Join us for Star Wars Night at Guaranteed Rate Field on Saturday, May 4th. May 4th, get it? As the White Sox take on the Boston Red Sox, first 15,000 fans receive an R2-D2 bobblehead presented by TransUnion. Visit whitesox.com to purchase your tickets and do it today.
I don't know if I got it.
May the 4th be with you.
I like it.
Very good.
I like it.
There you go.
White Sox Weekly, Michael Huff in studio as we talk about the White Sox training center, camps, all that. And, hey, we got a lot on the show today, including the general manager, Rick Hahn, coming up at 4 o'clock, 720 WGN. WGN White Sox Weekly with you till 5:30. Hope you're enjoying the non-baseball weather if you can. You got to get out and just.
I did.
Embrace it. You did?
I got out a little bit there just to kind of walk outside, and I tell you what, these snowflakes, they hurt.
These are some big flakes. I'm impressed. We're, you know, our view here is right straight down the Chicago River. Boats are still rolling here.
Yeah, they are.
People, the tourists who are coming in here, there's like three of them, but they're out on that boat, man. That's Michael Huff level of toughness.
They've heard about how beautiful the skyline is from the lake, so they're going to get out there even if they can't see it because of the snow.
So we were having an interesting discussion before the break here about how best to help your young man or woman advance their way through the baseball / softball, whatever it is, world. And you were making a point, Michael, that it's not, in your opinion at least, so many parents are like, you got to make a decision at 9 years old. What are you going to do? And if it's baseball, then you got to do that year round. You're shaking your head, so you don't like that at all.
Not at all. I grew up in an athletic household, but was playing soccer, football, basketball, baseball, was running track, was in all sport camps, probably up until eighth grade. And I think there was something about letting a kid develop their body, boy or girl. You guys were joking around before about what you learn in football versus basketball. I guarantee I played all three sports through high school. Football, I really learned the difference between an injury and pain. You know, when you come around on an option and a defensive end squashes you, you got to get back to the huddle. So, again, get out there if you're a little bit sore. Basketball, being the point guard, having to cover everyone's quickest point guard, I got down low, had great lateral movement, and trust me, that helped me become the base stealer that I was in high school, college, minor leagues, and even major leagues.
And what about just the sheer burnout for a kid who is doing it every day? The parents, like, you know, he's feeling the pressure that I got to be successful, I got to be good, I'm competing against my friends, I also want to get a scholarship. I mean, there's a lot on a kid's shoulder. You're taking away a lot of the fun.
Well, and there's so many parents that I've come across that don't realize that their kids can recognize that. I mean, it is so obvious when you have a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid whose dad is the coach, has pulled them out of the Little League because he's the third best player on the team, but he thinks, oh my gosh, I got to play travel ball because he needs to do more. And that kid feels the pressure from mom and dad. And again, just like you guys are saying, he wants to have fun. He wants to learn to love the game, but that's the quickest way to turn him off. And that's part of the reason that Reinsdorf started us 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen so many examples of that, even guys that have been successful. I mean, I think about Todd Marinovich, you know, just the fact that his dad really, you know, story goes, forced him into doing this and things happen. I'm not saying that everything is going to turn out that way. But, I mean, you got to let the kid be a kid at certain points. And I remember my dad coaching Little League. I mean, I was never one of the best players on the team, but I had a blast because I was playing ball with my friends. And after a baseball game, we'd go play basketball in someone's driveway. I mean, it was just the way we did things.
Everybody has a thought on this. And a lot of parents out there are like, you don't see the competition around me. Billy down the street is got a private this 2 days a week, and Bobby over here, and you're asking me to step back. And, you know, we've yet to have children, whatnot, and maybe hopefully someday it'll happen for both of us. And I listen. I can already tell that I don't want to be the person who's going, look, I got cut in seventh grade and I did it wrong and you got to do it the right way. I can already feel that.
Yeah.
Like, do you know who Steve Bartoli was? He cut me. That's not going to happen to you.
Yep.
And Dan, you know, like, I think a lot of parents, you kind of got to step back and realize it's not about you, dude. And maybe your kid's not that talented. Some of them aren't going to be Major League Baseball players, too. Let them just have fun out there and learn some life lessons. That's fine, too.
Well, and that, again, part of my spiel, which is very lucky, because it I know it comes across genuine, because it is. I never was a captain. I never was an all-star. I never played travel ball 7 years in the major leagues.
Wow.
So I can look at these parents and say, I was the 5-foot-tall, 95-pound guy entering high school, hoping to make the freshman a football team.
That was me. We have the same birthday, too. It's kind of weird. Michael Huff and I were both born on August 11th. I was 5'9", 5'0", 105-pound prepubescent going into high school. You're dead. Congratulations. Seriously, that is not easy to do.
Well, but to your point, I'm able to say to the parents, it is not playing 90 games this spring or this summer that's going to help your kid make a high school team. It's going to be, does he love the game? Does he play it with his friends? Andy, we've talked about this before, that how many kids now do you see just going with their friends and playing a game? Very few. Everything has to be structured. And that's one of the worst things that you can do for a kid's development. There's no imagination. There's no half field games when it's just 3 against 3. And if you hit it to that side, you're out. You don't learn how to hit to the other field because you don't have to.
Yeah. And I see it in basketball too. Like, I see 5-6-year-olds that are playing, and you've got these coaches out there, and they're wearing the jerseys, and the clock's going. And I get it. It's cool. It's fun. You're wearing Michigan or Duke or whatever. But, like, man, you're six. You should be at the park, yes. not in some super structured thing. And you should. And if you really like it, you should be playing all day until mom and dad say, hey, you got to come home and wash your hands and have some dinner. Well, and that just feels a lot more healthy to me.
And that goes back to, when did we come home? When the streetlights came on.
Exactly right.
You know, that's the only time that you knew it was time to go home. I think the best part about our summer camps, again, not even the fact that we're, you know, way north, way south, all the way out west in the city and the suburbs, is that for these kids, they're going to have a couple hours of real drills of the very basic fundamentals. How do you not screw up your kids? We're going to teach the kids how to do that. But then the last hour, there's going to be so many games. There's so much fun. And again, making sure that we incorporate bringing the kids to the ballpark, letting them watch batting practice, letting them watch how the professional players actually stretch. Because, heck, no kid wants to stretch. But when you see Tim Anderson and Yoan Moncada and Jose Abreu out there stretching, all of a sudden it's like, oh, if those guys are doing it, maybe I should do it too.
Michael Huff, Chicago White Sox, with us here in studio on White Sox Weekly. And if you want to learn more about the camp, WhiteSox.com/play, and just looking at it right now, it's $149 for a 4-day camp, $159 for a 5-day camp, $99 for a 4-day fast pitch camp. A lot of options here, 5 to 12 years old, 9 to 14 for the fast pitch camp. So you can check it all out. Get your kid involved, add on to the experience, and have some fun out there.
Yeah, you can join us as the White Sox take on the Boston Red Sox Sunday, May 5th at 1:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans receive a Los White Sox soccer jersey presented by Coca-Cola. Grab an ice-cold Coca-Cola and enjoy the game. To purchase tickets, WhiteSox.com.
That's awesome. All right, coming on back here, we've got the general manager, Rick Hahn. What are we going to learn in this interview, Andy? You talked to him yesterday.
We're going to learn a little bit about what he thinks about the two gentlemen that were drafted in the first round by from Michigan in the NFL draft.
Oh, wow.
We went a little off topic at the end.
All right, I like it. Yeah. Yes, Curtis, anything going on over there? No, you're good? Great. Rick Hahn, straight ahead, general manager of Chicago White Sox, White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
Good to have you, Jerry Reinsdorf. White Sox Weekly continuing up until 5:30. And Andy talked to the general manager, Rick Hahn, who, of course, is a huge Michigan
man. Yes, he is.
And so we got some a little NFL talk coming up here.
Inside, yeah.
A little reminder, though, and this is one of my favorite deals that you can get at Guaranteed Rate Field. Bleachers and Brews is back all season long. You get one bleacher seat and two beers for just $22. That is a steal. You must be 21 and over and with a valid ID, sir/gentleman/lady. Bleachers and Brews, presented by Budweiser. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews and enter the promo code BREW. So what do we got here, Andy?
Yeah, I was sitting with him yesterday. Weather was a little bit better, obviously. We were sitting in the front row of the scout seats right behind home plate, and had a chance to cover a lot of topics, and the first thing I wanted to know from General Manager Rick Hahn was his state of the Sox right now.
Look, there's a handful of things going on that are really positive right now in terms of the performances we've seen so far at the big league level. And I'll limit it, obviously, to the big leagues, not player development or scouting and all that. If you had told me on opening day that Tim Anderson was going to get off to the type of start he got off to, or Moncada was going to acclimate himself so well at third base as well as offensively in terms of some of the tweaks that he made in his approach, I'd be thrilled. I'd be absolutely thrilled. If you told me that Eloy was going to be performing at the level he's performing at, I would assume that that's reasonable for a young player, you know, just learning his first time through at age 22 in the big leagues. Like, that's not a surprise, and that's still on track with being a really, really good player in the long term. Rodon taking the ball and showing some of the starts he's shown, that's again another real positive. So you're talking about three or four young guys that we're counting on for the long term getting off to really good starts. I would have been really happy with that on opening day. However, obviously, the record's not what we had hoped it would be at this point. Some of the performances we've gotten out of some of the veterans hasn't been consistent on a day-to-day basis or consistent with what they've done in the past, which is disappointing. There's been a few games where we've beaten ourselves with bad defensive plays or poor choices, which that stuff's a little bit more controllable, and the kind of thing that it's one thing when you get beat by the other team. It's another thing when you beat yourself. And there's been a couple of games where we've beaten ourselves, which that gnaws at you. So it's been an uneven start. Again, a lot of positives for the long term, which is, again, probably a little more important in terms of where this organization's going than those frustrations we've had along the way. But overall, I'd have to say it's been somewhat uneven.
And at the beginning of the year, you said that if you won 81 games or 82 games and it was because of the veterans, you'd have to kind of look at it a little differently. You know, obviously now you're looking at the record as it is at this point, and you have gotten some good contributions. Let's talk specifically about Anderson. Just not the fact that he's hitting the ball, playing a better shortstop, and really has evolved as a leader on this team.
Yeah, all that is true. I mean, we saw that in the second half of last year in terms of his defensive rhythm and what he's capable of doing over there at shortstop. Obviously, the arm and the athleticism has always been apparent in spurts, but that consistency over there really came through at the second half of last year. Additionally, from an offensive standpoint, he's taken that next step. He's always had the ability to touch a ball all over and outside of the strike zone, but now he's gotten a little bit better, himself in a slightly better position to know which pitches he can really do damage on and do that damage on pitches, again, in and even slightly outside of the strike zone. The leadership side is something that we've seen internally growing for the last couple of seasons, and there's been conversations that we've had, that I've personally had, including one at the end of last season, where Tim really, you know, came to me on an issue as on behalf of his teammates, as he presented it with, and he was the advocate for the other players in that clubhouse. So it's not a surprise to see it sort of all come together right now, but it's really pleasing, and again, on sort of the trajectory that we've seen him now on for the last couple of years.
And his running mate over at third base, you talked about Yohan Moncada a little bit, but specifically, how happy are you with the fact that he decided he wanted to go get some work in the offseason about it, come back up here, and be a little bit more aggressive? I know you guys teach patience as well, but yeah, Patiently aggressive seems to kind of contradict itself, but he hasn't taken as many called third strikes.
No, that's true, and I think one of the ones he did, he got a little hosed on, which isn't a shock. He got a lot of those last year, too. We had talked about all towards the end of last season and most of the offseason in terms of the raw materials that he presents with, his raw tools that he presents with, and you would much rather have a player who, if he were to have a fault, let's say, that fault is not doing enough damage on strikes as opposed to expanding out of the zone and chasing constantly. In other words, having a young player that knows a ball from a strike is a really good place to be starting with, as opposed to a guy who just swings toes to nose and you're trying to teach him plate discipline at the big league level. So we knew, and obviously you saw the damage he could do when he got the pitch he was looking for or decided, I'm going to go get this one here. So being able to sort of grow that aggressiveness and get him a little earlier in the count, again, not swinging at balls out of the zone or not expanding what he wants to do, but, you know, again, taking that earlier pitch and doing damage on it that he knows he's capable of doing, that wasn't, in our minds, that onerous of a project, again, because of how gifted this player is. So to see him do that and do it quickly is very impressive to me. At the same time, this is sort of the player we were hoping that he would turn into, so it's not a shock, I guess I should say.
Let's turn a little bit to the pitching, too, because I'm sure you're not exactly pleased with what the starters have given you as far as depth into a ball game, and has really kind of created some situations that you've had to deal with as far as the bullpen is concerned. You do have some young guys out there still that are trying to feel their way through. What is your assessment?
Again, you're right. There's been some frustration with the consistency of the rotation. You know, the bullpen's been, for the most part, pretty solid, especially at the back end, and Jace Fry has added to that, Nate Jones has added to that over the last couple of weeks where they scuffled a little bit early. You saw us today make a move with Santana because we weren't quite getting that consistency that we wanted out of a veteran. That's why he was here, was to help stabilize that rotation, and unfortunately we weren't really getting that out of him. The young guys, you expect it to be a little more erratic. Again, we would love for Lopez to give us, you know, 6-7 strong every time out. We're going to see that at points over the course of the summer, and unfortunately you're probably still going to see a few growing pains on these young guys as they grow into themselves. At the other extreme, on the veteran side, there's, you know, that's not really what we're looking for, and that doesn't fit in terms of what we're growing for the long term. So we decide to make the move with Santana and give another young guy in Manny Benuelos the chance to every fifth day for the near future, or hopefully the rest of the season, show us what he's capable of doing as a starter.
Yeah, as you go through with a rebuild, there's guys along the way that pop up that you thought, oh, okay, let's give this guy a shot. And Benuelos seemed to be that guy during spring training and now even here in the first part of the regular season.
Yeah, you know, obviously Manny, coincidentally, years ago was a top prospect when he was with the Yankees. And he, unfortunately for him, had some injury issues along the way. And last year when he was in AAA with the Dodgers was really the first year in a little while where he sort of looked more like the prospect he was, say, 5-6 years ago. And one of our scouts, actually, Bill Young, when Dan Fabian circulated the list to all our pro scouts of who was impending six-year free agents last year, meaning minor league free agents last year, Yogi, Bill Young, called and said, hey, Benuelos is a guy who can help us at the big leagues now. He's much closer to being the player he used to be than the one we've seen in the last couple of years, and he's someone that, you know, I wouldn't even let become a minor league free agent, so you'd have to compete with all 30 teams, but he'd be a guy I'd try to get and add to his to our 40-man. And we agreed with Yogi's assessment and went out and made a small trade with the Dodgers for him and immediately added him to our 40 because we thought he could potentially help us. But you're absolutely right. It's not always going to be the most well-known guys. It's not always necessarily going to be the Moncadas and Eloys and Kopex and Ceases and the list goes on of the more well-known prospects that we have. But over the course of this, there's going to be a few interesting surprises along the way, too.
More of the general manager, Rick Hahn, coming up right after a quick timeout. A reminder, head to the ballpark for Dollar Hot Dogs every Wednesday home game this season. Take advantage of this unbeatable deal on Wednesday, May 1st. Sox taking on the Orioles at 7:10 p.m. It's brought to you by Securian Financial, who can help you make every moment count. Find out more at Securian.com. For tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/dollardogs. Today, more with Andy and Rick Hahn coming right up, 720 WGN.
Gone! A three-run homer for Tim Anderson. 3-1 White Sox.
Back to White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN.
As White Sox Weekly rolls on, more of my conversation with the general manager of the Chicago White Sox, Rick Hahn. I was curious to get his thoughts about this point in the rebuild, if his decisions on players are quicker or if he's going to let them develop a little bit.
Development is still king. That's still going to be of the utmost importance. So, for example, just because a spot in the rotation opens with Santana moved out, we're not going to bring Dylan Cease here, for example, because it's not in Dylan's best interest in terms of his development to necessarily be here yet. So development is still going to be over, you know, the ultimate wins and losses. And again, it's difficult. You hear me sort of hesitating on that a little bit because, you know, we're all competitive. I see how hard Ricky and the coaches and the players work each day. I watch all these games. I attend, you know, just about all of them. And you want to win. You want to win as much as possible. In the end, development's gonna still trump that. Now we're transitioning to a team that understandably and deservedly has slightly higher expectations, and certainly in the coming months and years we're going to be a team that expects to win, and then the patience is going to be a little shorter for guys whose development may not be moving along at the pace you want. Right now, look, Ronaldo Lopez is benefiting from being, from getting the ball every fifth day and learning from whatever mistakes he may be making. You know, Giolito, before the injury, was really progressing nicely, and you want him to, we're going to wait for him to be fully healthy before we put him back out there, but we're eager to get him back out there because it's going to help us win more ball games.
And it's not like because a guy disappears for, say, 5-4 months, whatever, he's not still on your radar a little bit. And I guess the guy that I'm really specifically talking about is Carson Fulmer, who had some struggles when he was here last year, and now you've brought him back in a little bit of a different role, and he seems to have really accepted that role and kind of flourished, except for maybe one of the outings so far.
No, that's very true. And as a general rule, you don't want to certainly write off anyone who has the talent and the makeup and the work ethic to contribute to a championship. In a specific or more granular situation, you know, with Carson, He obviously took his lumps as a starter last year and really needed to sort of hit the reset, which he was able to do this offseason, put a underachieving season behind him and sort of readdress who he was and what he was trying to accomplish as a pitcher and make some mild changes mechanically. Frankly, if anything, he's gone back more towards what he did in college when we had greater success, which he's been able to translate to success in shorter spurts at the big league level, which is great. You know, he is showing himself as being fully capable of playing a role on a really good team, which again, and if that rolls for like really well for like the next 6 weeks, and then there's some hiccups along the way, that's not necessarily shocking, but certainly isn't going to lead to you giving up in any way on that guy's upside.
All right, speaking of development too, the outfield situation that you guys have developed now between Double A and Single A, you got Luis Robert. Of course, everybody's licking their chops at the way he got off to the great start. That's got to make you feel really good, at least going forward, knowing that you have guys you can go down and get, but at the same time, you can kind of relax and let them develop.
Yeah, that's the outfield situation is one where you look at the long term and you feel really good about where this is headed. It doesn't necessarily serve us much in the short term. We've already mentioned, you know, Polka struggled early, and now Ryan Cordell, another young guy, not perhaps of the same prospect stature as some of the names you mentioned, or the guys running around Double A and A ball right now. But another young guy gets an opportunity to show what he can do. In the coming years, it's going to get a lot more crowded in terms of premium-type guys that can help this team win. You know, Chris Getz, our head of player development, and I had a long conversation yesterday about, you know, some of the ripple effect of some potential moves here in the coming weeks with some of these young guys. In Kannapolis, a guy like Steele Walker, our second-round pick last year, is off to a tremendous start. You mentioned Luis Robert and A-ball. Luis Basabe is coming off of his hamate injury and then rehabbing in Kannapolis, and soon will be ready for Birmingham as well. And that's going to not only create a little bit of crowd, a little bit of competition, and the guys are going to get moved to different opportunities. So it's going to be exciting as that gets closer and closer to Chicago. And quite frankly, we're going to have some choices to make at some point here about, okay, these, you know, three, four, five guys are guys that we view as, you know, premium types that are capable of helping us win a championship in Chicago, and these, you know, three, four, five guys, you know, perhaps are more better served to us as trade assets to address other needs.
I'm glad you mentioned Chris Getz. I wanted to talk real quick about the draft coming up. I mean, this part of the rebuild, does it force you to kind of change anything as far as philosophy with who you might pick in that first, and with your first selection?
Not really, no. It's tough. This isn't the NBA and isn't the NFL where you can expect a guy to go from the collegiate ranks and help you immediately. So in general, you rarely see teams draft for need per se. Especially with us picking number three in June, we're going to look for the most impactful talent. And that sounds like a cliche, but the fact of the matter is unfortunately, certainly I know I'm not, and not many people around here probably are smart enough to know exactly what this team's going to look like in 2-3 years, or where exactly, you know, a potential injury or underperformance is going to happen. So therefore, we're going to have a need here. So it'd be foolish to pass on, say, a premium middle infielder because you say, well, shoot, we already got TA, we got Madrigal, let's stay away from the middle infield. Still doesn't take away from how great you feel about those guys, but if all of a sudden we have too many, you know, middle infield talents that are capable of winning championships, that's a good problem to have, and I look forward to us trying to parcel through how to allocate all that talent.
All right, you mentioned the NFL. I've got two for you here. I mean, obviously, I know that you're a Michigan guy. You had to be pretty happy with the first round, the way things went with Bush and Gary, although Gary goes to the Packers.
Gary went to the Packers. Gary went to the Packers, which, you know, that I can't disown him because, you know, he's still a Michigan man, as Bo would say. But yeah, my sons and I were waiting to see where the Michigan guys would go last night, and when one of them wound up in Green Bay, that might have to just get a little distance. Just a little distance for the early part of his career, at least.
Yeah, don't disown him. Just cool on him a little bit, right? Okay. Exactly. All right, so here's the big hypothetical. And let's pretend that all the rules of baseball as they are right now in the draft are thrown out the window.
Okay.
And you're Ryan Pace, and you get a chance to acquire the Khalil Mack of baseball,
oh,
and you give up your first two picks for the next 2 years. Is that something you do?
Yeah, in a heartbeat. They did. Look, Ryan and the staff over there did a tremendous job. They changed, you know, it goes beyond just Mac, but Mac was obviously a big, big part of changing the identity of that, certainly that defense and that entire team, and was able to accelerate their timeline, really, in terms of being championship Super Bowl contenders, which is what it's all about. So, yeah, you don't have that luxury in baseball. It'd be very interesting to see if you could all of a sudden package, you know, 3, 4, 5 picks over the course of years in order to acquire a certain talent. It would certainly change the face of a lot of rebuilds and how teams approached it. But, you know, that's just a hypothetical right now. So all I can do is sit on the sideline like any other Bear fan and certainly be appreciative of what they've accomplished over there.
All right, so I'll leave you with that hypothetical, and thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely happy to do it.
General Manager Rick Hahn.
Big Bears fan, man. Huge Bears fan.
It's tough, man, when you're well, first of all, I don't know, is it hard for you, Michael, have to hear all that Michigan stuff? I mean, I know.
Yeah, they're really hard. Being a Big Ten guy at Northwestern, there was only one team that kind of always got to me, and that was Big Blue.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't hate Ohio State, too, because I have
no. No. But, I mean, when I was at Northwestern, we got to the Big Ten Finals, double elimination. We had beaten them once in Michigan. They beat us once. They beat us in the championship game. They had the shortstop, Barry Larkin.
He was pretty good.
He sucked.
And then I ended up getting drafted and having to play with a guy from Michigan, and he could not stop showing me the Big Ten championship ring.
Ooh.
And I'm like, okay, Mike, enough. And by the end of the summer, I'm like, I'm done with Michigan.
See, now that right there.
Yeah, that's a good reason.
Bench clearing brawl, fully endorsed.
And he's a teammate. I almost took him down once, and he's a teammate.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick timeout. Ron Kittle is coming up after 4:30. We'll get you checking news. White Sox Weekly till 5:30 on 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly rolling along here on 720 WGN. Sox game has been snowed out tonight, in case you missed that one.
I would have played. Come on, this would have been fun.
But hey, I'm with you, man.
I'd have been sitting in a booth, so what do I care?
Day, night.
Just kidding.
I played in one like this.
I'm sure
did you?
University of Wisconsin. The last year they had baseball, we had to play a doubleheader because their field was underwater in Beloit. And the first day of the doubleheader, fourth inning, I'm whistling, screaming at the umpire, and finally the guy from second comes out, and I said, I just have a quick question for it. He's like, what? We're trying to get this game in. We're almost there. I'm like, turn around and can you see home plate? And he's like, no. I said, neither can I. Can we please stop it? So we ended up picking it up and playing two more on Sunday. Played a triple header on Sunday.
That's amazing. That's a good job right there. Michael Huff in studio with us as we've been talking about the White Sox camps and their academy, and now we have a special guest on the line who we have a lot of conversation to have with you today, Ron Kittle. Great to have Kitty on the radio as always.
Hey, I only get to come on when the game gets snowed out. Is that right? Is that what we're looking at?
That's not fair. We've had you on a bunch, Ron Kittle, but maybe going forward that could be a thing. When it snows, we call Kitty.
No, everything's doing good. I'm out here in Morris, Illinois, getting ready to do a speaking event at a they call it a gala for Basset Hounds, and they've got a pretty good group of people out here.
I saw you made a new bench, right? You got a new product out there.
Yep, this one is a White Sox one. As a matter of fact, there's two of them. I didn't have to bring both of them tonight, but a north side and a south side bench, and it'll be auctioned off tonight for this great cause. And these people have, they worked hard to keep their Basset Hounds and other pets in family homes.
That's a beautiful thing. If you want to buy online, Kitty, how do you do that for the benches?
Just go to ronkittle.com, and every bit of information about me is there. Some of it's even scary, but it's all online.
Hey, Kitty, I want to ask you a quick question about the game today. Not just the game that snowed out today, but just in general. We saw Tim Anderson the other day flip the bat after a home run, and he did it again last night, but he did it toward the White Sox dugout. And you hit so many home runs in your career. Did you ever flip the bat, and what do you think of all that stuff these days?
You know what? Times have changed. I was scared to flip a bat because my own teammates would probably pound it on me, let alone my father. So, not to brag, I think I've hit baseballs farther than anybody who's ever played the game, and I ran as hard as I could. And my teammates used to say, hey, slow down, enjoy it a little bit. With my luck that I've had in my career, it might have hit a pigeon or something and fell back in play, but You know, to win a ball game, you can get a little bit more excited. I think Timmy jumped the gun the last time and he got drilled. And if he was playing in the 80s, and Mike Huff could tell you this, you would have got drilled immediately the next at bat.
And you'd have walked to first, and you hope to steal it. And if not, you, again, it's over and done with. I mean, we talked about that earlier, Kit Kat. The players took care of each other. And once it was done, you just moved on, and there was no more retaliation, and no other people got hit.
Yeah, you know, I broke up a no-hitter from Nolan Ryan one time at home in Chicago. We faced him in Texas, and he drilled me my first at bat, and it stuck in my bicep in 90, I think in 90 or... Yeah, 90. And I picked it up like an apple, and I flipped it back to him, and I went to first base, and Palmeiro goes, he's right behind you. Don't say nothing really bad, you know. And it's just mutual respect. I didn't try to break up his no-hitter. I just tried to hit the ball. And unfortunately, I did, and the consequences was in my bicep.
See, but isn't that wrong? You weren't doing anything, and Nolan Ryan's got to get all, I'm going to drill round kill because he got a hit. I can't agree with that, Kitty.
Well, you know, the rest of the ball game was a storyline. He was winning 2-0, and myself, Harold Baines, and Ivan Calderon hit back-to-back-to-back home runs, and we beat him 3-2. So, you know, payback's back to haunt him.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So you and Michael were Michael, weren't you telling me you guys were in spring training with the Indians?
Spring training, yeah, with the Indians. I was telling the story, Kit Kat, about how well you did that spring, leading the team and leading the whole Arizona League in what was it? Was it batting average or home runs?
Batting average, home runs, and RBIs.
And what happened at the end of spring training?
And he walked up to me. The manager goes, "You know, our team's not going to be really good. We're going to be letting you go." And I go, "Oh my goodness gracious!" And I couldn't have had a better spring. I worked hard for it, coming back from injuries, and I just tipped my hat. You know, it's a business, and I understand. And I think that year the Indians, if I'm not mistaken, Mike, they lost 104 games.
Yeah, we were not good. No,
you know, but I proved myself, and I had a chance to go play with a couple other teams, but I was still having issues with my shoulder and my neck, and it was just really hard to come back into the game again.
I want to ask you guys about Eloy Jimenez and what you're seeing early with him, but also he sprained his ankle last night going back on a ball, jumped into the fence, and I don't know where everybody comes out on this, and this is a little bit of my hot take of the day, but part of me is like, don't play hard. There's 162 games. If you crash into walls, you take yourself out for a month, you're actually hurting the ball club. I know that that's a very nuanced conversation. Like, should you be people want to see fans, baseball players, whatever, they want to see guys sprinting to first base and going into walls. But half the time, bad things end up happening. I don't know where you come out on all this, Kittle, there's a conversation there. I know that. I'm trying to get somewhere here.
Well, my second year, 84, after my rookie year, I jumped for a home run ball by Don Baylor, and I hit the brick ledge in Old Comiskey Park. You know where the patio was? And I dislocated my shoulder. I wasn't trying to do nothing spectacular. I was just trying to make a catch. I think if he would have set himself up to the fence, to the wall a little closer, he could have just jumped straight up. He jumped awkwardly. I don't know how his foot got up there. I think he saw too many highlight films of great catches in the last past 20 years. And tried to do it, and unfortunately, he might not have that athleticism to do that kind of stuff. But you know, he's hurt. But we need him healthy. I probably would have stayed in the game with a sprained ankle because my speed wasn't going to be my positive thing in the game. But the game has changed. They want to see highlight films of themselves.
And for the record, I'm not blaming Eloy for playing hard, but I there's also I think there's some coaching and learning experience going along here, Michael.
Well, I think Ron said it best. That there's, and you just said it as well, Mark, there's a coaching and a learning experience. As the Eloy Jimenez, who is more like a Ron Kittle than Mike Huff, Mike more a lot more like Adam Engel, what you have to understand your strengths and your weaknesses, and one of your strengths, if not the biggest strength, is your bat. And the potential of getting 150 plus games this year, 600 at bat. So understanding the defense is what the challenge is in your game. You should be thinking, how do I work Daryl Boston as often as I can? How do I play when I can feel on my feet, I'm on the grass? And then as soon as I start to hear the chink, chink, chink of the warning track, I need to be smart enough to start to say, okay, I'm not going to be robbing home runs necessarily, and let me now play within my ability.
Well said. You know, it's just experience. But nobody works on fly balls right at the fence, jumping over, unless you're just doing it horsing around. But, it was a freaky thing, and freaky accidents can hurt the team in the long run. And we do need him in there swinging the bat. And, you got to knock in more than you let in, so that's going to be his theory.
Let me ask you guys both, because, Jimenez came up with so much expected of him. And, guys try to live up to that sometimes, especially a new contract that a young kid basically signs. And I guess you can't excuse youthful exuberance every once in a while, but there is a difference between when you guys came up and learned the fundamentals and knew how to play the outfield and knew how to play the infield and knew situational baseball. It's a little bit different this day, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. You got to know the ballpark, too. I mean, when I came up, the brick wall was it 9-10 feet? Nobody went over the top to rob a home run. Nowadays, you can reach over and snatch it from foul pole to foul pole. And you just need to learn the game and to learn the field that you're playing at. I mean, Mike was an outstanding outfielder. He knew what was going on, but he played it his whole career. Me, I just wandered out there my first day in the big league, said, "You're a left fielder," after catching and playing first base my whole life. But you learn, and I learned not to crash in the wall anymore.
Well, the other thing, Kit Kat, is when we were coming up, you rarely saw guys jumping two levels or three levels. You went to rookie ball, and if you did well, you went to A, and if you did well, you went to double A, which meant there was instruction league, there was winter ball, there was so much more instruction, I think, when we were playing around. And tell me if you disagree with this, but again, when you're 21 and all of a sudden you're in the big leagues, yeah, there are certain parts of your game that can play at this level, but there's also parts that, again, we hear it all the time, they have to develop at the major league level.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to play cautious from now on, which is probably the worst thing that's going to happen out there. So some Daryl Boston's going to have to get on him and say, "Hey, get to the wall first, find yourself, if it comes in shallow, rush and get it. If not, just wait there and jump straight up." But he's got to play cautious. Anytime you injure yourself, it hurts you in the long run until you get over that fear factor.
Kenny, what are your thoughts? Let's go also around the diamond here. What are your thoughts on the way Yoan Moncada is playing over at third base?
I like him there. I like the guy, period, to play. Last year was an experiment. He took a lot of pitches. This year he's swinging the bat, and he's hitting some of these balls. I like the young White Sox team. I don't sit there and watch it. Like last night, I was too busy watching Thor in the end game instead of watching the 12-11 win. But I came home and I caught the ending of it, and yeah, they're excited. Ricky's boys, they play hard, and they play to the very end. And I've seen over the years, teams I've been in, they would have, other teams would have gave up. They didn't. They just went out there and competed and won a ball game.
Talk a little bit about that, too, because with Moncada, last year he was taking a lot of called third strikes. This year it's a little bit of a different situation from both sides of the plate. He's actually improved a lot from the right side as well.
Well, when you're a young kid coming up, the umpires want to make sure they know they're in charge, not you. I mean, last year I saw him get called out on some pitches that were just foolish. But, he did a good job not speaking his mind. This year he's going up there with a little bit more confidence. Umpires are believing in his ability. And he's going to get a break on pitches now and then. But, he's hitting the ball hard. Just let him keep on playing out there. I like what's going on. Yomar Sanchez is one of my favorite players on the team. The guy just brings excitement. I know if he's not hitting good, his defense is going to battle a little bit. But now he's getting a few hits and making some great plays. And he's in the ballgame. And I know he's the first one there with a 5-gallon bucket of Gatorade when you win a ballgame.
Dumping it out himself. Yeah, we talk about Moncada. Like you, Kit Kat, I love the fact that now at third base, he can just use that raw athleticism that he has and react to the ball that's hidden at him because it's coming at him so quickly, and he doesn't have time to think about it. And with that, he just looks more comfortable, looks more natural. And like you said, I love his new approach at the plate of, okay, last year I was kind of learning, been here now, been there, done it, got the T-shirt, so now let me start to get a little bit more aggressive, whatever Todd talked to him about over the offseason. I like it as well.
Yeah, you don't have time to think at third base. It's all reaction. He's doing a good job on it. It's a long year. Like today is an off day with the snow out there. It might do him well to get everybody just feeling good again. I was in Baltimore, watched 3 games. Fun time. I mean, they won one. They got tallywhacked 2 games, but you know, other teams are going to win too. But I like the way they're playing. I like the infield, to tell you the truth, for the Sox. And they're only going to get better the more games they play together.
RonKittle.com if you want to check out the bats. And you're down where? Morris, Illinois today? Is that what you said?
Morris, Illinois. I last time I did a speaking event in Illinois that started with an M, I got hustled by a lady in bib overalls at 2 o'clock in the morning with Roland Heeman. And that was in 1983. And this lady, and I was scared to leave because I thought she might beat me up.
Kitty, you're the best. Good luck.
Thanks,
today.
Guys.
Do well. We appreciate you.
All right. Talk to you guys soon. See you guys.
Ron Bye. Kittle. Chicago White Sox, RonKittle.com. I want to talk to you guys coming back here.
About Morris, Illinois?
Well,
Chicago legend, Ron Kittle.
That's exactly right. I actually want to talk to you about umpires and where we're headed, because technology keeps on getting better. I see you making a face over there, Michael Huff.
Can we talk about Joe West specifically?
Sure. And well,
he's
back,
my favorite.
Well, back in the day, I'm sure there was many flamboyant umpires who were calling balls and strikes when Michael Huff was at the dish. So there's let's have a little fun with that coming on back here. 720 WGN.
It's good to be king, just for a while.
White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Andy Mazur in studio. I'm Mark Carmen. Michael Huff, former White Sox, working with the White Sox camps in the studio as well. Bears are on the clock as we've been monitoring the draft as well today. We had a little special draft deal, and Adam Hoge will be with us after White Sox Weekly at 5:30. But just to update you on the Bears real fast, because I know White Sox fans love the Bears.
I mean, the GM.
This one does.
Yeah. Kareth White was the last Bears pick in the seventh round, number 222 overall out of Florida Atlantic. Another running back. Andy, I know you got the goods on him. We'll get to that in a second.
Yep.
Let me give you the rest of this. Kansas State cornerback Duke Shelley was number 205 overall in the sixth round. And before that, Riley Ridley, the receiver out of Georgia, and then the running back all the way back in the third round, David Montgomery. So that gets you caught up, and we'll see. And they just picked Stephen Denmark, cornerback, Valdosta State.
Ooh. What's the nickname of Valdosta State? Do we know?
The Generals? I'm making
no clue.
I'm guessing on that one.
I'm just
one.
Asking.
What, you guys excited about the draft? What do we got here? Any reactions to a Kenneth White?
Well, I mean, they say he's got a little breakaway speed there, but you know, you look at the NFL draft. It's as Rick Hunt was telling me, you know, earlier yesterday during the conversation you heard earlier. It's so different to draft in the NFL than it is in Major League Baseball and other drafts, because you're expecting these guys to get on the field and help you immediately in the NFL. But in, you know, Mike, as you know, I mean, when you get drafted in the big leagues, you may not like your position the first time, go back into the draft, and then, you know, kind of wind your way through and hope to get there.
I think Kyler Murray was thinking about that as well, as people kept saying, you might be higher and higher in the first round. It's like, you know what? Even, I bet if you go back historically and look at the last, from 3 years ago to 13 years ago, that 10-year period, I bet only half of the first rounders made it to the major leagues. So it doesn't matter if you're first rounder by Oakland, you still are 50-50 to get there, because it's so difficult.
And you were the 16th round, correct?
Very good, yes. A Leo to a Leo right there, August 11th, August 11th. Yes,
16th
round.
What? Describe the emotions as a young Michael Huff, and the name gets called, 16th round. Were you expecting to be drafted? Were you pissed at that point? Were you like, what the hell's going on? Or were you like, oh my God, thank God. I thought I was going to go in the 88th round.
Well,
how many rounds were there back then? 42? Something
no,
like that?
I think it went as long as you wanted. Yeah. But for the most part, the vast majority of teams stopped around the 30th to 35th. But teams were allowed to keep drafting if they wanted to. Honestly, but my junior year, I remember my coach coming up to me and saying, you know, Mike, you have a chance to get drafted this year. And I looked at him right in the eye, dead face, and I'm like, there's no wars going on, coach. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, like in baseball. I'm like, I'm not really that good. I mean, we have Joe Girardi, we have John Troutwine, we have Tom Hildebrand, we have these great players. And he's like, no, but for what you do, getting on stealing bases, playing a good defense, you know, would you be interested in getting drafted? And that was the first time I thought about it. My junior year, I had talked to a couple teams, and when they said, hey, what do you think you would want? And I kind of said, X dollars. They're like, well, how about Y? And I'm like, well, Y sounds good, but I need Y plus because I have one more year at Northwestern. And they're like, okay, we don't think you're worth Y plus. So I'm like, all right, let me go back. So senior year, I really thought senior outfielder, you know, 30th round, 25th round, if I get drafted. So I'm out with my family and some friends, and all of a sudden the phone, someone's like, hey, you know, your mom and dad are looking for you. I'm like, what the heck for? And they're like, you got drafted. I'm like, what? Already? 16th round? I'm like, thank you very much. So I was really, really excited.
That's awesome.
That's good. That's good stuff.
We were, by the way, the Valdosta stage.
It's the Blazers.
It's the Blazers,
yeah,
right.
I looked it up.
Circling back to what we were talking about before the break, as far as umpires go, there's a movement, at least a little bit of one, that, hey, let's get rid of the home plate umpire and have robots calling balls and strikes. I personally would have no problem with that. Let's get the strike zone correct. You don't get to create your own strike zone. However, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. We were talking during the week about how certain umpires, they want to be the show back there. They think they're actually part of the game. I know that bothered you.
Oh, again, back in those 90s, there were probably a half dozen, both in the National League and the American League, that if you ask them, what do you think fans want when they come to the ballpark? They're like, well, they want to see us as much as they want to see the player. And you would look at them sideways like, no. You do your job if nobody knows you're there. So be quiet and just do your job. Andy, you made a good point. If there was an umpire that would make a bad call on you, either running through first base, sliding into second, or just balls and strikes, and they gave the three hop on the right foot, so all the fans were looking at him, and then you look at a video the next day or a highlight, and they were wrong. The next day, if you turned and looked at that guy on any questionable, he would almost throw you out of the game.
Yeah.
So you had no chance to try to even come back at him. So it was so frustrating as a player.
Yeah.
Hated it.
Because it's all about showing up, and that's what they worry about. They worry about being shown up by the player, but then they have no problem doing it the other way.
Because
and that's crazy.
They
crazy
have talk. The authority. The other thing was, again, your point. And again, tip your cap to Maddox or Glavin or Smoltz, but when, you know, Charlie O'Brien would start to sit up 6 inches outside and they'd hit the glove, it'd be a strike. Three more inches, he hit the glove, it'd be a strike. I remember one time in spring training, look at the umpire and saying, I can use a bat paddle, or I mean a boat oar, and I can't hit that. That's so far outside. And he's like, well, Mike, he's hitting the glove. And I'm like, that's not over the plate.
Yeah.
So to your point, that, you know, to have that moving zone, and then for the umpires, it's really, really difficult when you have that moving zone to be consistent to both teams.
Right.
So
real quick, when I was in San Diego, our pitching coach, Darren Balsley, who was a great pitching coach, suggested that the umpires, instead of using the robots, he thought that the umpires should be standing behind the pitcher. Because you get a better view from behind the pitcher where the ball is, not only in relation to the plate, but high, low, in, and out. And he thought that it's such a disadvantage to have them behind the plate because you really can't tell sometimes. If a catcher is 6 feet 5 inches tall and the umpire is like 5'10", even when he's crouched down, you can't get a real good look. And you set up on the inside, it's hard to see where the outside of the plate is. If you stand behind the pitcher, you can get a great clear view.
Yeah, I don't disagree. The only challenge is that the umpires will always come back and say, well, from behind the catcher, I'm 2 feet away from the zone. From behind the pitcher, I'm 60 mm-hmm. feet. But to your point, the only time I would ever question is the inside. Because as that ball came in, I could almost follow it inside. I could see it off the plate. Outside, I know it's outside, but it's hard for me,
right,
to turn around and say, hey, that ball's off the plate. He's like, how the hell do you know? And I'm like, oh, you're kind of right. I really don't.
Real fast, who's the one umpire, if you saw him right now walking down the street, you wouldn't say hello?
Oh, I wouldn't say hello, probably.
Or at least try to cross over to the other side and help that he didn't see you. Maybe if you crossed him, you'd say hello.
Ed Brinkman. Ed Brinkman would be the one.
Ed.
He was a tough one.
I love that. All right, Michael Huff's in studio. We got a half hour more of White Sox Weekly. Fun stuff for you coming up right after 5 o'clock. We do have to take real quick time out. News in 2, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, this is 720 WGN with you till 5:30. Michael Huff in studio, Andy Mazur, and yours truly, Mark Carmen. A reminder that Family Sundays feature tickets as low as $5 in the upper level. Let me say that again, $5 in the upper level, $15 in the lower level. Let me say that again, $15 in the lower level, parking for only $10. Plus, you could, take the train out there too. CTA does a nice job. Great deal all around, plus special family-focused activities located throughout the ballpark. Family Sunday is proudly presented by Coca-Cola. Grab an ice-cold Coca-Cola and enjoy the game. Visit WhiteSox.com/Sundays to purchase your tickets today.
Okay, I need Mike to take off his headphones for this one, okay? Calling all Illini alumni and fans, join us on Thursday, May 2nd, as the White Sox take on the Red Sox at 7:10. Purchase this ticket package to receive a co-branded White Sox Illini jersey and the chance to watch BP before the gates open. To purchase tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/Illini.
We were talking during the break about umpires and about just being a professional baseball player, period. And for a guy like you, Michael Huff, who's battling to stay in the big leagues, you're not Barry Bonds, you're not Frank Thomas, and you get maybe 8 at-bats in a week, and some umpire's having a bad day, and he's calling strikes that are or calling balls that are strikes or vice versa, impacting your livelihood. And then it makes me think about like a guy like Nicky Delmonico, who just came back up and now was down in AAA, and Daniel Palka. All these, there's the glamour of the guy who's there, but then there's also the life of like my whole livelihood is on the line every single day, and you're playing against dudes who are really, really, really good at the game, trying to stay there too. It ain't easy.
No, it's not easy, as you said, and it's one of those things that it's a part of the game. You're going to have 9 guys, 10 guys that are pretty regular, but every team needs those 2 or 3 guys on the bench, the 2 or 3 long relievers that when they have their times and when they get that one game a week to play, that's where you're really hopeful as a positional player that the umpires are having a good day and that they're consistent with their balls and strikes. And again, that line drive up the middle that the shortstop stabs and somehow manages to throw to first, you beat it by a half a step, but that he doesn't call you out and then the next day comes up and says, I think I might have missed that call.
Did you enjoy playing, or did it feel like your whole life was on the line every day? Like, I can imagine being there, and it's so awesome, but there's, like, so much pressure.
I would say there was moments of really enjoying it, and I wish I could have reveled and just realized how special it was. That first year in 91 with Cleveland, getting a chance to play pretty regularly, 92 with the White Sox being the opening day right fielder before an injury, and then 94 up in Toronto the year I hit 300, and you're playing every day. There is definitely a different mindset when you know you're going to be out there and you know you're going to be playing every day versus that guy on the bench that you have a role. And guess what? If you don't do that role well, there's another 35 guys drafted this year, and there's another 35 guys drafted the year before that are just waiting to take that opportunity.
And that brings me to my point, because as a player, you had to go through that. You had to go through the single A, double A, triple A, back to the big leagues, and live in that constant fear of not performing and not living up to the expectations of the organization, and then getting sent down. My pipe dream for the umpire situation would be to have a GM over the umpires, because you had a GM calling the shots for your life, basically. Hey, Mike, you're not getting it done. We're sending you down.
Doesn't mean you can't come back.
Yeah, doesn't mean you're not going to be back, but we're going to send you down.
You got to work on a few things.
Exactly.
And here's what you got to work on.
Exactly. Now, if you're an umpire, I'll just pick one randomly, C.B. Buckner, who can't call a ball from a strike if his life depended on it. He's still up there taking a big league check away from a guy who's hustling his rear end off in AAA. But I get it. I mean, the union is very, very strong right now, and it'd be very difficult to employ that. But you wonder, and I don't know if an umpire would ever give you an honest answer to this, if they get a little complacent, because they look around and they're at a big league ballpark every day. They're getting their major league money. They're getting their great travel. Yeah, I know they don't have home games and that kind of thing, but they get vacations now during the season. I mean, I wonder if that just kind of plays into the whole thing.
Well, and I'm not sure if it's complacency, but there is something to be said for when you see a player or someone get a 5-6-7 year deal, that intensity isn't going to be the same all 5-6-7 years. We also talked about this, and I totally agree with you, Andy. If you could have a GM of umpires, he would have to be, or she would have to be, in charge of the umpires at the major league level as well as the minor league level, and be able to say, almost like in soccer over in Europe, that the top 3% in AAA or the top 5% in AAA are coming to the majors, and the worst 3% or worst 5% are going to the minors, with an understanding. C.B. Buckner, you are great on the bases. You call everyone out or safe when they're stealing, which is incredibly difficult, but you struggle with the outside strike. You're going back to AAA this year, and I need you to work on that outside strike, because if you can rate out in AAA, you're going to be back here the next year.
And I understand. And people are going to say, oh, it's not an easy job. I get that. It's not an easy job.
Neither is a major league ball player.
I was just going to say, neither is it getting to the big leagues, because it takes a process. There are so few players that get to that level and are automatically keepers. You know, I mean, there's a very small percentage of that. And yeah, you know what? For all the bad we see with umpires, there's a lot of really good ones that kind of get lost in the shuffle because they get lumped in with the rest of the guys.
We're getting a little bit short on time for White Sox Weekly at the bottom of the hour, so I just we'll end at the bottom of the hour. I want to just get a little bit of the stuff that's going on the field this week. Ervin Santana got released.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys were surprised by that. He obviously was not pitching particularly well, guy coming back from an injury. So that was a disappointment that it didn't work out. But your thoughts, Michael, on the fact that White Sox moving on?
I think the surprise was that he struggled as much as he did. I mean, to have success and to be in the major leagues that long, you don't expect that quick a drop-off, even with an injury.
Yeah, and this kind of illustrates the point that Rickon was making earlier about the fact that it's all about development now, and if a guy is a veteran who's supposed to be in the clubhouse, you know, helping guys, and maybe he still was. I mean, even if he wasn't performing, he still is a veteran pitcher that has been an all-star before and been in the postseason. But this clears a spot now for a guy like Manny Banuelos to prove whether or not he belongs at this point, because as Rickon told us, just because there's an opening doesn't mean Dylan Cease is coming up right now, because they want him to develop.
How long do you guys think the leash is for Ivan Nova, who's been has good starts, but also, you know, got roughed up this week against Baltimore? Here's a guy that you know, the White Sox went out and got from the Pirates, but I don't know. I mean, he's been up and down.
Yeah, my guess is he's got another month for sure. If he stays hot cold, I think at the end of May, you know, Rick may have to make some tough decisions. But you would hope that as the weather warms up, not like we're seeing today, but as the weather warms up, he warms up and finds a little bit more consistency.
Yeah, I would say that he's got a little longer leash, you know, being healthy, first of all, and being a guy that they traded for rather than picked up at the end of spring training to give a shot to. I think he's got a little bit longer, but again, it's not extremely long.
All right, let's do my favorite moment from the week, and it came in the Baltimore Orioles game, or I think it was game two of the series. And a White Sox fan in the stands looking for a baseball. It didn't work out for him, but it sort of did. Here's the audio from the Sox TV.
Doesn't want it. If it's not coming to me.
Wait a second. The Sox fan does not want it from the Oriole fan.
Oh, that's what
it is. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I can compromise my principles.
I can just lie about who threw it. Look, you have to have scruples, right?
Well, up to a point, yes. But when you really want a souvenir, sometimes. Okay, so here Flores throws it in, which is a nice thing, and the Oriole fan catches it, which is also. But you know what? Nope. And he says, nope, I'm not taking it. It's from an Oriole fan. Forget it. And then it's too tempting. It's just too tempting.
You got it.
Yep.
Oh, I don't want it.
Doesn't look like he's elated with that.
Yeah, it's crestfallen souvenir receiver.
Boy, I get a new baseball, but boy, am I depressed.
That was so sad.
Yep.
You're not supposed to be forlorn when you get a ball.
So there was the kid's wearing a Sox jersey. It was an Oriole Flores who throws it in the crowd. Orioles fan
reached out. Yeah,
you know, he's 40 years old, and then he sees the kid, so he feels bad. So here's this parent trying to reward a 12-year-old kid too, right? About 12 years old.
Looked about 12. Yep.
Yeah, and the kid, he doesn't want it because he didn't catch it himself. And the guy kept on insisting, and then finally he takes it and he's pissed. I loved that the kid didn't feel like he was entitled to the baseball. Like, a 3-year-old, you could give it to him. But the 12-year-old, right?
There was integrity. His mom and dad are teaching him the good baseball etiquette. You know what? If I don't catch it, it's not mine. And it really doesn't have the same kind of panache to it.
And then there's the 40-year-old who, if he doesn't give the ball to the 12-year-old, gets booed out of the stadium.
See, right. And that's the thing. You, first of all,
I'll bet the 12-year-old heard all the boos coming, too. So he's like, okay, I'll take it.
Well, there's a certain integrity. Like, listen, that does not count in my mind as catching a ball in the stands,
right,
if it's handed to you by a player. It's got to be off the bat. You've got to make a play. Then that's like that's the top of the mountain as far as getting a ball.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. But that's a pretty close second. Yeah. If there's a real major leaguer with a real ball, game ball, looking and tossing you, that's still pretty special.
That's okay. That's number two. Okay, fine. What about a real major leaguer walking to you right on the wall and handing it to you? There's a difference between that and right? I mean, it's nice, but you got the ball because you're sitting in the front row.
Yeah, I like the guy throwing it to you more than just handing it to you.
That's how I got the only ball I ever got in my life. I was at Wrigley Field with my grandfather in September of one of the 70s years, where it was like 5,000 of your closest friends were there, and we were sitting by the bullpen, and I'll never forget, the bullpen coach's name was Jimmy Saul. So my grandfather takes my glove and throws it over the wall to Jimmy Saul to give me a ball. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm looking at my grandfather like, what are you doing? That's my glove. I need it for tomorrow's game. And it came back with a ball in it. So I'm like, oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
What was your philosophy, Michael Huff, when you're in the outfield and they're screaming for you for a ball? Hey, Huff! When would you?
They rarely said the last name. There was other adjectives thrown in before that, especially on the road. At home, you know, I would always try to find a couple kids, boys and girls. I'd try to make sure I got close enough that could say thanks for coming out and then tossing them the ball, but saying to the kids also, hey, I can only toss a couple, kind of wink, wink, nod, nod. I got to focus on here. And for the most part, at home especially, everyone understood.
One of the coolest things I've ever seen a player do was it was a White Sox-Cubs game at Guaranteed Rate Field, and Greg Maddux is in the outfield, and he sees a kid down the left field line with a mitt, and he points at him, and the kid kind of looks at him, and then he waves like, I want to play catch with you. And they start playing catch from, you know, 30, 40 feet, and it goes on for a while,
yeah,
like 10
yeah,
throws.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a memory for a kid.
Right. You don't need a ball. I mean, because again, that you will be able to tell that story forever and incredibly impactful.
I was weeping that it wasn't me. That would be a lot of fun.
Can I bring up a play from last night's game?
Sure.
That I don't think I'd ever seen before in my entire life, but I knew the rule. But it was the home run, the second home run for Jose Abreu last night, which ended up not being a home run because he actually passed Tim Anderson on the base pass, and I give John Hicks a lot of credit. The kid from Detroit was playing first base, immediately was holding his hands up like, hey, we got to review this, and they take the home run away, and they call it a two-run single because the ball actually left the field, and he get a put out to the first baseman on basically what turned out to be a long home run single.
Yeah, Tip, I remember a couple times not being the guy at first, definitely not the guy hitting the home run, but there was a couple times at second when I was on second base and there was a guy on first, deep fly ball, are we both going to score? Am I going to tag up because there's nobody out? But I remember consciously looking at the base runner, yelling at him, wait, because I got to see this. So again, for Tim, I'm sure he's halfway thinking it's a home run, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute. I don't know if that's out. If I tag up, now we have two guys in scoring position. So as the hitter, I never really hit home runs, so I was never looking that way. But you wish Jose may have been looking down
way,
a little bit quicker.
I was driving back from dinner, listening on the radio, and DJ called it right away.
He did.
He nailed it. Was all over it. But they were not 100% certain what the rule was, which eventually got clarified and whatnot. And luckily it didn't end up hurting the White Sox because Timmy came through. And we got a special guest coming back here, great White Sox fans. So let's take a quick timeout and we'll wrap up the show with one of your White Sox diehards next, 720 WGN. Wrapping it up on White Sox Weekly, Mark Harmon, Andy Mazur, Michael Huff with you. The beat will continue at 5:30. Joe Brand's going to sit in with me till 7 o'clock. I saw a great piece this week, guys, WhiteSoxPride.mlb blogs. Live and Breathe Southside Loyalty is written by Matt Gillespie. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. And this is a White Sox season ticket holder. His name is Andy Palagai. I hope I'm saying that right, Andy. We'll talk to you in 1 second. And he goes, as a season ticket holder, he comes from Peru, Indiana. So that's a 120-mile drive to get to Guaranteed Rate Field. And his goal is to see the White Sox play in every single stadium. and he's got Atlanta left. So this is a true diehard. And joining us now, White Sox Weekly, Andy. Thanks for taking time. You are you deserve some pub, man. You're an incredible fan. Congrats.
Thank you, fellas. I sure appreciate this opportunity.
Do you remember Michael Huff back in the day? Because I know you've had a season. You've been a season ticket holder forever.
Yes, sir, buddy, White Sox outfielder.
Thank you very much. 39 years. That is incredible. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Favorite moment in White Sox history, Andy. Go ahead. Outside of winning the World Series, you get pick something different.
Okay, I'll give you a good one. Philip Umber out in Safeco Field in Seattle. I was there for the perfect game.
You were in Seattle for the game, too?
Yes, sir, buddy.
That is some serious good luck right there. That doesn't happen.
It was.
All right, so what's your favorite park outside of Guaranteed Rate Field that you've seen? Of course, you haven't been to the new Atlanta Stadium yet, but what's the one that you've liked the most?
It's easy. I'm a big favorite of Baltimore's Camden Yards.
And you've got these pictures, Andy. You got hats with things on your head. You got jerseys from everywhere. You're a very distinctive White Sox fan. What's your favorite thing that you get to wear to a game?
I like my Frank Thomas jersey. It's an all-star jersey. I really enjoy it.
And you sit in section 124, row 8, is that right?
That is correct.
Do you want White Sox fans to come say hello to you and say they heard you on WGN? Are you down with that?
Absolutely. I'm all for it.
All right. Andy, you're the fan of the game here, man. I wanted to recognize you. This is a cool story. So keep on going, man. The White Sox appreciate you. You know that.
Thank you. And if I could have one moment, I'd sure like to give up one little plug.
Yeah, go ahead.
Eddie C. Thanks, Ed.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it. Eddie C., you're the man. There you go, Mazer.
I think that's pretty cool. Now, I want to ask you this too, Mike, because as a player, when you look around the stands, there are certain people that you see every day, and you know who they are, right?
I mean, yep,
you get to see the people.
Well, at home you do.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, for their home games. That's got to be pretty cool, because you get to that familiarity with these people that are sitting there all the time. I don't know, do you know their names and things like that when you were playing?
When I was playing, yes, especially out in the outfield. For me, you know, playing mostly in right, sometimes giving Lance or Tim Raines a day off in center and left, but in right field, I would hear every day, you go New Trier, go Northwestern, and you start to turn around, and they would say, hey, I went this year, or I went to college this year, and all of a sudden, it's like, do you know this person? And two or three degrees of separation, you realize pretty quickly, I know this guy, or
That's
this
awesome.
Woman, and yeah, you would jog out there, and you'd kind of like look up, and you'd see them, and you'd wave, and they'd wave back. It was pretty fun.
That's cool.
Our fan Andy, by the way, was sponsored by Mazda of Orland Park and ZoomZoomNation.com. We're always trying to make your car shopping fun. I mean, to grow up in this town and to get to play for your hometown team, and I know you grew up both a Cubs and Sox fan, that doesn't happen to everyone, Michael Love. You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a great journey, and these 3 years here were incredibly memorable.
Did you get to play for your hometown team?
Well, my hometown radio station. You know, I get to play for this station.
That's true.
That's pretty cool.
This is a huge opportunity also.
Pretty cool.
But it's not as cool as playing Major League Baseball.
Well, that's true. But I knew I was never going to do that. You know, the world needs announcers too, you know.
That's a very good point. A lot of fun today, man. Great to see you, Michael.
Thank you, Mark. We
hope to do it again.
Here. Yes, likewise.
And Mazer, you are all right, too.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I'd like to think that Mike carried the show just because he can.
Right. We were just here, just living.
Yeah, it's okay.
It was a lot of fun. All right, team. White Sox game, of course, was snowed out tonight. Doubleheader day night, July 3rd. Sox and the Tigers tomorrow. You'll have the pregame at 12:35. All right. White Sox Weekly is a wrap. The Beat is coming up. Joe Brand will be with you. And, news coming up in 2 minutes on 720 WGN.